From NPR News, this is Foreign Dispatch, a weekly roundup of some of the best coverage of news and events filed by NPR correspondents from around the globe. I'm Chris Benderev. This week, a blind Chinese activist makes his escape, refugees flee the violence between the two Sudans, and Madrid looks to shine up a slum it's neglected for decades. In China, a blind activist has made an audacious escape. He had been under house arrest, but now it's not clear where he is. All that is known is that he's in hiding and safe. But as NPR's Louisa Lim reports, the same cannot be said for his family or his fellow activists.
Why can I not go visit this man?
Hollywood actor Christian Bale is used to action.
When actor Christian Bale tried to visit Chen Guangchun in December, he was assaulted by local thugs. Dozens of these men have guarded Chen's house in Linyi in eastern China day and night for the past year and a half. But somehow, 5 days ago, the blind lawyer slipped out, evading the all-seeing security. Supporters drove him to Beijing. He's released a video saying he is safe, but giving no details of his whereabouts. He asks China's premier, Wen Jiabao, to investigate his family's brutal beatings.
This case is too inhumane and damages our party's image. Dozens of men broke into my house and beat my wife up. They held her down on the floor and covered her with a quilt. Then they punched and kicked her for several hours. They also beat me violently.
Chen is a blind, self-taught lawyer who exposed forced abortions by local officials. He served 4 years in prison for damaging property and disrupting traffic. After being released, his own house effectively became his new jail. In the video, Chen describes how security agents accompany his six-year-old daughter to school every day and search her school bag. He voices fears of insane retribution against his family. He says local officials made money from guarding him, so had no incentive to solve his case.
At a local level, they don't want to deal with my case. Those who make policy don't want to solve it since they fear their crimes will be exposed, and those who implement it are absolutely corrupt.
Those fears of reprisal are justified, as shown by this panicked phone call made by his nephew, Chen Kegui. It was recorded by an activist in the early hours of the morning. Chen Kegui describes panic in the village after the lawyer's disappearance was discovered. Dozens of men, he says, attacked him and his father. He describes a bloody fight, and he admits to stabbing his attackers.
They hit my head with really big sticks. I had to fight back. But they saw I was not scared, so they left. I'm afraid of being captured by them and being beaten to death.
Now, a local government website says Chen Kegui has fled and is being sought by police. An activist, He Peirong, who helped the lawyer get away, has now been detained, according to Bob Fu, a US-based activist for ChinaAid. Fu says the symbolism of the lawyer's escape is striking.
He wants to make his voice heard by walking out of his own home, by the tight security and surveillance. So he sent a strong message that the Chinese securities are not almighty God, you know.
In the past, Chen has had high-level support, including from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But any asylum attempt would likely lead to a major diplomatic row, and Chen's position is very vulnerable.
What makes Chen's case so difficult for the authorities is that he has become the poster boy of the activist lawyers who are fighting for ordinary citizens' rights.
Nicolas Bekala of Human Rights Watch. He says this escape will likely not improve the human rights landscape.
The parallel here, I think, would be when Liu Xiaobo got the Nobel Peace Prize. There was a moment of fleeting joy among human rights activists. That was followed by one of the harshest crackdowns against the human rights community in years.
China's leaders are struggling to contain the fallout from the downfall of a powerful politician, Bo Xilai, whose wife is suspected of murder. With a slowing economy and a major political crisis, China's coming transition of power is looking shakier than it did a few months ago. This new spotlight on human rights violations can only further unsettle the government. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
Coming up, refugees flee the violence between the two Sudans, and Madrid looks to shine up a slum it's neglected for decades. The fighting between the two Sudans has displaced tens of thousands of people, and UN agencies are struggling to deal with the consequences. We hear more now on the humanitarian situation from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. He stopped by NPR to speak with Michelle Kellerman.
The movement of people across new and often ill-defined borders shows just how complex this conflict is. In recent months, South Sudan has hosted refugees from conflicts in the north, and Sudan's bombing raids in the south have gotten awfully close to those vulnerable populations. The UN's High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, describes the humanitarian situation on both sides of the border as dire.
The fact that the two countries are not able until now to come to a peaceful solution of the different areas in which they diverge has a dramatic humanitarian impact. And we now are seeing again South Sudanese coming into Kakuma camp in Kenya. And that shows how terrible the situation must be.
That was a camp that was set up in 1992 for refugees fleeing a decades-long civil war. When South Sudan gained its independence last year, refugees started returning home in droves. Guterres says that was a hopeful moment, but one that has passed.
Well, that movement has stopped. I mean, we helped go almost 500,000 people go back to South Sudan from the neighboring countries, from Uganda, from Kenya, from the DRC, from Central African Republic. We also helped a lot of people go from Khartoum into the south. In the past, all these movements have stopped, and we are now witnessing refugees from the north in the south, and also a new wave of refugees from South Sudan, both in Kenya, as I mentioned, and now also in Ethiopia.
So what does that tell you about sort of the status, or the fragility of this peace agreement?
It's not only the fragility of this situation, it's the same around the world. Old crises seem never to die. Afghanistan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, Somalia, it goes on and on and on. And there is a glimpse of hope in a moment where an agreement seems possible. But then all of a sudden, everything gets into turmoil again. And this is an enormous challenge for the humanitarian community in the world.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees says he's counting on countries with influence in the region to put enormous pressure on both Sudans to make sure this war stops and to deal with their issues pragmatically. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is making a similar appeal.
We have been reaching out continuously to the south. Others have been reaching out to the north. We understand how difficult the unresolved issues are between Khartoum and Juba. But no matter how difficult the negotiation ahead may be, it is far preferable to war.
The tens of thousands of people displaced by the recent fighting is just a drop in the ocean for this part of the world, says Guterres. But he says access is tough, the areas are remote, and he's not sounding confident that the two sides can be persuaded to step back from the brink.
And if there is no political will and no leadership able to bring the two countries together, the people of Sudan and the people of South Sudan are going to suffer enormously in the months to come.
And this at a time when the UN's top refugee official says the humanitarian community is stretched thin, dealing with crises elsewhere in Africa and the Middle East. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
This is Foreign Dispatch. I'm Chris Benderev. Spain's economic woes are getting worse. The country's credit rating was downgraded yesterday, and today's unemployment figures jumped to nearly 25%. As the Spanish economy has collapsed, more and more people are calling an illegal settlement outside Madrid their home. At the same time, the Spanish capital has been expanding, and the city limits have moved ever closer to the shantytown. And with the city desperate to find new revenues, it's now eyeing the property for possible development. Lauren Freyer has the story.
In Cañada Real, roads are unpaved. Houses are made of corrugated metal or cement. Some lots are just piles of garbage. And when the power goes out, local men get together to climb up the utility pole and fix it. 40 years ago, Cañada Real was built by peasants who moved to Madrid for jobs. With the economic crisis, the settlement has swelled to as many as 40,000 residents, a mix of North African immigrants, Roma people, and other Spaniards down on their luck. Cristina Pozas has lived here for 11 years.
We've lived here for generations, but now the suburbs are encroaching on us, and suddenly we bother them. The city has arrived here, and they want to get rid of Cañada Real. They want the money this land could bring them, and they want us to disappear.
After decades of turning a blind eye to this illegal settlement, cash-strapped municipal authorities want the land back. So over the past 2 years, they've sent bulldozers to demolish dozens of homes here. Abdul Gailan's house was one of them. He kicks at a pile of rubble, all that's left of his home. A broken ceramic tile, a memento from his homeland, Morocco, falls off the side of the pile.
They totally left me in the street. Thanks to help from my neighbors, I rebuilt my house again. But 6 months later, they came at 4:30 in the morning and demolished the house again, leaving me and my family in the street.
Cañada Real is built on a traditional livestock path, a 9-mile-long dry riverbed that's been public land for 700 years. People are allowed to be here, just not to build permanent dwellings. Residents pay income and sales tax, but not on property. Most built their houses themselves, with water tanks, but no sewers. There are no schools nor health clinic either. People have to walk to other neighborhoods for those services, and they often use friends' or relatives' addresses, says Pozas.
When my sons apply for jobs, they give the address of their grandparents, because if they admit that they live in Cañada Real, no one will give them work, and they are very accomplished students. Like them, it happens to so many people.
The stereotype of Cañada Real is unfair, says Marta Mendiola with Amnesty International.
The local authorities have tried to criminalize people living there. They always have represented this area as a drug area, as a arm-dealing area.
Residents and human rights groups say those problems are exaggerated to win public support for demolitions. It draws attention away from the real problem, they say, lack of affordable housing in Spain. Luis Nogues is a social worker and professor who studies Cañada Real. He says the slum provided many of the construction workers during Spain's housing boom.
Ahora con la crisis, la cañada ya no es un negocio.
But now in the crisis, Cañada Real no longer serves a purpose for big business interests in Madrid. And that's the problem. So they're poised to remove it now. The only question is how.
On that recent night without electricity, locals mill around in the unpaved street. Ahmed Bilkain came from Morocco 20 years ago for a better life. He says the living conditions here are a rude awakening.
We are here in the European Union. You can't leave people without houses, without anything, out on the street, leaving children out in the street. You can't do that.
Especially in a country with surplus housing. The irony is many of these residents helped build high-end condos that now sit empty while they live in squalor. Abdul Gailan, whose house was demolished, struggles to explain this all to his two kids.
They say, Papa, it's okay. We can build another house. I tell them our house was built poorly and that I'll build a better, more beautiful house for them. I say it to calm them down, to stop them from worrying.
But he worries himself. Cañada Real is now one of the sites where developers are thinking about building EuroVegas, a casino complex that'd bring revenue to the city. If the project goes through, it's unclear what would happen to thousands of people living here. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
For more international coverage, you can listen to your local NPR station. You'll find a list at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find more international stories by clicking on News and World. For NPR News, I'm Chris Benderev.